Biggest goal is to reach a point where I can play in the NBA All-Star Celebrity Game.
Knew this was going to come up. I was trying to get away from this. And
we're talking about Nick Cannon, the guy with 11 baby mamas and like 11 kids, you know?
It's like you get blacklisted for life if you do something like that.
UFC superstar Jorge Gamebred Masvidal, dude. What's going on, baby?
What's up, everybody?
Everybody, welcome into Man to Man Podcast.
Today we're switching things up and talking man to woman. Please welcome on the show, singer, songwriter, social media star, Lauren Gray. We know you like the DJs.
I am okay.
$1.99 for a banana bag, bro.
Oh gosh. Look, it's calling right before the episode too. Pops, what's good? Yeah, Hoop starts with me. We're about to rip an episode. What? Why you sound so loud, dude? Yeah, dab water. You drinking those? Yeah, I got four on my desk right now. Which one do you want? Steve, grapefruit? How many have you had, dude? Yeah, that's a little. Put the can down, dog. Put the can down. Listen, I can't. Save a couple for me. I can't talk right now. Brent Pella, he's a comedian. Yeah, he's got a special out on YouTube right now. It's called Conscious Bro. Very funny guy. He used to play basketball. He's from California. Yeah. All right. Why are they going down so smooth? Zero carbonation. Yeah. 100 calories. You're fine. Go hit the treadmill tonight. All right. Yes. Yeah, I love you too. Yeah, I still got the Christmas tree up. Okay. All right, bye. Jeez Louise, dude. He's on dad. Well, I guess everybody's on dad water now. So while we're at it, dad water presenting sponsor before we have on Brent Pella, comedian. He's got the special out on YouTube right now called Conscious Bro. Dad water, my personal favorite, lime. Pineapple jalapeno is Gary. Lime is Tom. Pineapple jalapeno is Gary. Rodney, a.k.a. Blood Orange, and Steve, which Pop's old head is on, is grapefruit. Listen, Dadwater is in 30-plus states, Tennessee, California, Colorado, Illinois. Click the link in the episode description to find out where they're located near you. You can also order them online. The MTM boys are on Dadwater. You like them, Hoop? They're going down smooth. Why, little Timmy? Zero carbonation. Zero bullshit. Drink Dadwater. Even if you're not a dad, you're an aspiring baby daddy like Hoopstar and myself. We're getting athletic with Dadwater on the weekends. Trust us, boys. You want to shotgun them? You want to drink them? They'll go down smoothly. Listen, go check them out. Dadwater, tequila, water, natural flavors. Now let's get into the pod.
Got yourself in a rocker, dude.
A solid one or a two guard. And then when the injury happened, I hit a pivot. And I got into the student newspaper and the student radio station. So I started covering all the sports for the school media outlets. And at the same time, I was in the film and media program at UC Santa Barbara. So I started working with other people on small student film projects. And this is also around the time The Lonely Island was popping off, with Andy Samberg and everybody, right when YouTube comedy sketches were like hitting their first peak. And they were a massive inspiration. So they... And those guys were actually like the biggest influence on me in putting out comedy videos and trying to test out comedy videos online. So that was college. And then after college, moved down to LA, got a job at the Cheesecake Factory, which was my day job for a bit. And then a secondary day job was as a PA. I was a production assistant on commercials and music videos, pouring coffee, moving lights around, throwing away trash, whatever. And I had the opportunity early on to actually PA on an Andy Samberg Lonely Island music video,
nice.
Which was crazy dope. Yeah. And I was like 23. I was fresh out of college and I got to see like how these guys were working on set. And I was comparing it to the way that I had worked on set and on my own little like funny student video projects. And I noticed it was kind of the same. They had way more money. They had way more people. They had way more like props. But their flow and how they were communicating with each other and like throwing each other jokes and messing around on set. That's what I was doing with all my boys when we were shooting these comedy music videos in college. And so I went up to Andy Samberg at the lunch line one day when we were broken for lunch. And I asked him, I said, "Hey, you know, you guys have always been like my biggest inspiration. And I just graduated college and I'm making videos online. And I was wondering, like, what did you guys do like right after college?" And he was like, "Oh, well, I did stand up for 7 years," which I didn't know. He said he did stand up for 7 years and he was never really great at it. According to him, it was just something that he could use to work on his writing, work on his performance. And so a week later, I started doing open mics, and that's what really got me on stage for the first time.
How do you like in terms of doing, I think everybody now knows or it's starting to get known about YouTube, especially for our demographic, is a lot of more people are on YouTube. How do you like the difference between maybe making a YouTube video in terms of just putting it out there and then doing like early days, just a stand-up routine, you know, in a, you know, small comedic club or something? What's the difference between that you've seen?
Dude, or, yeah, there's to me, there's no more fulfilling like moment than hearing the laughter of an audience in person in the moment. Nothing beats that. It's immediate validation. It's immediate energy exchange. You get to see people being happy that maybe weren't before. And so in that moment, there's something very powerful that happens. Even if it's something silly, just a silly little joke, a silly punchline, you get a wave of laughter and there's just something like really palpable and awesome about that. Which is different from making a YouTube video, because if a video goes viral and pops off, the validation and the love that you see is in comments and likes and engagement. And that's cool, but it's all on a screen. So it's a different type of fulfillment, you know? But man, nothing beats being on stage in a club and rocking with people live. That's my favorite.
Did you hate doing stand-up at first though? Like you, as a 23-year-old kid, you're probably doing your first couple of shows. You're like, dude, this sucks, dude. I don't want to do this.
Dude, yeah, I was bad. Dude, I was bad, dude. And I mean, I think everybody's bad when they first start because it's so unnatural to be like talking in front of people and trying to be funny. And I used to like try to figure out what I should wear. I was wearing running shoes with jeans because I thought that was the move. I looked like a dad who just got fired from being a dad. It was weird, dude. But, you know, it takes time. And I did my first like 2 or 3 years. I kept track of all the open mics I did on like a spreadsheet. I went real American Psycho with it. And I think I did like 400 spots throughout my first 2 years. To really track like what I was doing and rewrite jokes and rewrite, listen back to recordings and try to figure out a process to get better. Cause it takes a while, but it's fun as shit.
Talk about the process then a little bit in the development of your comedy style or just your journey when you started and then kind of where it is now a little bit. What's that process in terms of, I don't know, writing jokes or just trying to get a laugh anywhere you can or
yeah,
what's kind of your process?
You know, the biggest change for me, I've been doing stand-up for about 10 years now. The biggest change for me is like I've alleviated the concern of what other people think about what I put out, you know? So when I first started, I was really I really wanted people to like me. I really wanted what I said and did on stage to get a positive reaction from everyone in the room. And I learned over time and just part of like any artist's or creator's growth is the more you stick to your authentic self, the more love you're actually going to get in the end. Because even if some people don't like your authentic self, the people who do are going to like it way more than if you were trying to be evergreen and attractive to everybody. You know, it would be like, do you want in a room of 100 people, do you want everybody to like kind of like you or do you want half the room to love you? And so that's been like the shift over the past 10 years. So now when I'm, you know, thinking about material to write or writing out a bit or a joke or whatever, I'm never really writing with the idea of like, oh, I wonder what people will like. Instead, now it's like, I like this topic, so I'm going to share this and we'll see if anyone likes it. It'd be cool. But if they don't, I'm going to find out quick and then I can pivot from that. So that's been kind of like the biggest overarching shifts as far as like my own creative process goes.
What did those days look like though, when you were still doing maybe PA work in the Cheesecake Factory, and then like at 9 o'clock you got to go do a stand up in front of maybe like 15 people, and you're like, dude, is this going to work or not? Like, what did those days look like?
Yeah. Those days were nuts, dude. It was, so I had the Cheesecake Factory job first, and that was fairly easy because I would get off, you know, some days I'd have to work until 10 PM, but there's still an open mic or two I could do after that. And then when I started doing PA work, there was like a 5 year stretch where I would do Cheesecake Factory in the day and then open mics at night, or I would have to get my shift covered at Cheesecake Factory because I had to PA, and I always took the PA job first because I never knew who was going to be on set. And I got to watch all these masters at their craft. I got to watch Neil Brennan Evan, what's Seth Rogen's writing? Goldberg. Evan Goldberg and Neil Brennan directed a Bud Light campaign that starred Amy Schumer and Seth Rogen. So I got to see all those people like in their element working. I got to see Paul Rudd. I got to do like a Mac Miller music video, which was super rad. And I got to see like all these heroes of mine, all these artists that I loved. I got to see like what their process was like. Mac Miller's involved taking a 4 hour nap, which was hilarious. And then he came out and he crushed, and it was dope. And so it was constantly like trying to figure out how to balance my mind. Cause when I was at Cheesecake Factory, I'd be writing jokes on the back of receipt paper. And if somebody came up to like place an order or get sat or whatever at the host stand, I'd be like, oh yeah, just give me like 1 minute. And I remember like writing out the rest of the thing, cause I got to get it out of my brain. And then PAing, I would like sometimes toward the second half of those 5 years I was a PA, I'll just lock myself in the production truck and turn my walkie off and just do, I would be like editing videos in the car. And then if somebody called to me, I'd have to run out and go like move chairs around and move the pop-ups around. And then as soon as I had a break, I'd look around like, okay, nobody needs me. I go back to the truck. I'd edit more videos. I'd like be producing my own videos, setting up like logistics and locations for my own little shoots. So it was like constant movement, but it was like a really cool, like, I don't know, like cyclone of creativity. Cause I'd be around all these people doing dope stuff, and then I would be motivated to make my stuff even better. So it was cool. I was constantly in this state of like creative movement. And now I get to just do all that for myself. Cause thankfully I don't have to work at the Cheesecake Factory anymore.
Yeah.
After let's say after those 5 years, when did you, I mean, we talked to a lot of people and they have that moment of, oh, I caught my break and now I'm bigger than I was and now I can start doing this kind of full time. When was that moment for you in terms of, dang, I'm actually going to do this and put all my resources, I'm going to quit my job at the Cheesecake Factory. Do you remember that moment?
And a badass PA job too. Yeah. It sounds like that. Yeah. Not a lot of people at 23 get.
Dude, yeah. Have you guys ever worked in that capacity
no,
before?
Dude.
Like
we
a
just
PA?
Hear about it all the time. That people want to do PA jobs in Los Angeles, dude.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's so cliche. Job. Yeah. But it was dope. It was such a cool opportunity. You know, when it comes to like getting a break, I still don't feel like I've gotten like a big pop just yet. I know it looks different from the outside, especially when friends tell me like, dude, you did it. You told it like you're there. And I'm like, am I? I don't feel like I'm there. I'm still like very much working toward a couple of bigger goals. But I think that's the way life is, you know, is you never really land. It's just a constant shift upward. But I will say, you know, I quit at the Cheesecake Factory in 2019, I think, 2018, 2019. And then I was a PA for about 2 years. And my last PA job was February 2020. So I was a PA like exactly 4 years ago. And then when COVID hit, everything shut down. And I was kind of I was like, at the time I had thought I was already like a year away from being able to just do comedy and break even every month and like be broke, but not have to PA. So when COVID hit and PA jobs all went away and there was no work anywhere, I tripled down on video content online. And I went from making one video a week to three or four, all through COVID, all through 2020. And I ended up making more money that year on YouTube and Facebook than I ever had. It wasn't like a ton, but it made up for no PA jobs. And so when PA jobs started coming back, I looked at my income, and now I was getting a couple of brand deals here and there because the following had been built a bit more. And the following had been built because I tripled down into video content. So that order of events allowed me to not have to call out to the producers who had been hiring me over the past few years. And then when I got on Wild and Out, which also happened in 2020, but the shoot got pushed to 2021. That was also a big boost and raised my following a bit more. And so now, like, a big part of my income over the past couple of years, because it's all based on income, really. Like, when you quit a day job, the biggest thing is how you gonna make a living? How you gonna survive? So my goal was, if I can work with dope brands that I really like and I really love and I use and I believe in and that are doing good for the world, then that can be my like day job, you know? And that started happening toward the end of 2020. So that's what really allowed me to not have to go back to the PA world.
What about Wildin' Out? How did you get involved with that? I think that was like, that's the first time I've even saw your face, to be honest. Cause
oh, cool.
I haven't watched MTV for a while, yeah. But I would always see clips and, hey, you know, this is a funny bit or whatever it was. So how did that come about?
Yeah, dude. So I was doing Eminem impressions for a while.
I saw those.
Did you guys grow up hip hop heads?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. That's
who'd you listen to growing up?
Who was? Lil Wayne.
Lil Wayne. Mac Miller.
I just got a cool fucking tattoo with a Mac Miller quote. I think we might just be all right. Thank God, from the album. I don't know, but the song "Dono," such a good song.
Cool. That's dope.
Eminem.
All the old school. Yeah, kind all the old guys. School guys.
We weren't really like Biggie or Tupac, though. I feel like, I mean, Tupac a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a little older for us. But like, even like, I would say like J. Cole's early stuff, we would listen to.
Cool.
Yeah.
But kind of that kind of area. Weezy. But I saw your Eminem impressions; those are pretty funny, dude.
Thanks, bro. Yeah, I grew up with Eminem too. I remember being like in the age bracket where the Frosted Tips were all the rage, dude, and all my friends had them, and my mom would not let me get them, and I'm so grateful that
there are
no
photos.
Dude,
I got them in sixth grade, bro. I got them in sixth grade too. Yeah.
That was a shit, dude. So yeah, growing up with Eminem, I was always a fan, and then you know he started getting like real angry on his last couple albums. He just got like real angry, and he's always dope. His lyricism is top tier. He's the best lyricist, in my opinion. And then when he released Kamikaze, he had a couple of tracks where every other line he was just dissing like this rapper or this genre or this style. And so I did this video called Eminem Disses Everything. And that was like one of the first, maybe the first comedy video that I made that like went crazy viral. And I ran with it. And that was around 2020, maybe late 2020 or 21 or something. And so I ran with it. Started doing more Eminem impressions. And then I saw that Nick Cannon had put out a diss track toward Eminem. And I didn't really know why. I guess Nick had beef with Eminem over some reason. No idea. And there were a bunch of Wild and Out guys in the music video diss track that Nick made toward Eminem. And I was reading through the comments on this video. And people were toasting Nick Cannon. Like, toasting, dude, like saying like the funniest stuff. I couldn't even, you know, the internet is undefeated, right? Like people on the internet are the funniest people especially when it comes to roasting people. The specific insults that people got for other people on the internet is insanely funny. Like on TikTok comments, I'll just go on TikTok sometimes and read the comments. Somebody on TikTok once said that I look like the before picture for Mr. Clean. It's like,
that's, I mean,
one of the most Painful
and
insult.
And it's like the top comment. You can tell like if a video does bad or good just by the top comment, and it's like a roasting comment. It's got 5,000 likes. You're like, dude, right. I gotta take this one down, dude. You know?
Right. So I was reading through the comments, dude, and they were so funny. And I wanted to make a video where I dressed up as Eminem and responded to Nick. But I was reading through the comments to see like what people really hated about Nick's video. And it came to me like, yo, these comments are way funnier than anything I could write. So let me just use these comments as the lyrics. Mm. So I screenshotted like 50 of them and I reordered them to make them rhyme. And then in the video, I would put the screenshot of the comment up as I wrapped it as Eminem so that the original commenter would get their love. And then Eminem would be like rapping, and it would be like Eminem plus the internet response to Nick Cannon. And it was kind of brutal because some of the stuff people said was like sharp. But he ended up seeing it, and he DM'd me on Instagram a couple days later out of nowhere. And he was like, what's up, bro? Are you ready to wild out? And at first, I didn't think it was him, but he had the blue check. And we started talking on Instagram a little bit. He invited me out to his studio in Burbank to meet up. And he showed up in like, you know, slippers and sweatpants, and he was like a Jordan t-shirt, and we kicked it for like an hour just talking about comedy and music and wilding out. And he invited me to be on the show after that because he had seen all the videos, and he knew I came up through a couple different sketch and improv programs in LA. So I had the background. And he's such a giving, like kind-hearted dude. He's put so many people on and given so many people opportunities. So I was like mad grateful that he picked me out of the crowd on the internet. But that's how I got on. And it was a dope ride.
Yeah. I guess that you answered it. What I was just going to ask you there, he's not just randomly hitting up a guy with 10 followers. I mean, right. It sounds like you already kind of built that page, invites you over to his crib. We're talking about Nick Cannon, the guy with 11 baby mamas and like 11 kids,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a football team now. It's crazy.
Wait, what football team?
No, like his kids.
Oh, that's funny. That's I'm dumb, bro.
He's got every position is filled.
I'm like, what football team? We got to place a bet today, right? Oh man, you can tell. And then that was kind of like the same time Matt Rife got on too, right?
Matt actually left, I think, one season before I did. Okay. So I filled his token white boy shoes.
Okay, that's funny. Okay, yeah. And what does that look like? Just like a year contract then? And so you're doing Wildin' Out, and then you're also doing just stand-up still in L.A.?
Yeah, so they sign you. The contract for Wildin' Out starts with 6 seasons, and they can re-up you if they want, or they can drop you at any time. So I've done 4 so far ever since he brought me on, which has been super dope. And then they moved to BET, so they postponed filming, I think, for a little bit. But the production schedule of Wildin' Out is pretty crazy because we shoot 30 episodes in 2 weeks. So we're shooting like 3 episodes a day for 2 weeks straight, which is bananas. And it's out in Atlanta, and the crowds in Atlanta are nuts, dude. It's so fun. The energy in that room is insane.
Do you just live in Atlanta like part-time throughout the year then?
No, because we only shoot for 2 weeks.
Oh, for 2 weeks. So, okay.
Yeah. So we fly out to Atlanta for 2 weeks, and then they shoot like every 8 to 12 months. They shoot a new season.
Gotcha.
So we just go out to Atlanta, kick it for 2 weeks, and then fly back to LA or wherever everybody's from.
Interesting. Okay. So still doing that, and just obviously stand up is your job. When do you sign to somebody? Because it looks like you are signed to like an agency that's kind of helping you out with promotion and maybe publishing or whatever else behind the scenes.
Yeah. I've been doing everything myself for the past 10 years. Yeah. I have a manager. My manager is the man. I love him. He's been rocking with me for the past maybe 2 or 3 years.
Then what was I seeing? What was that on Instagram? Like with you doing collabs with 800 somebody?
Oh yeah. 800 Pound Gorilla is a comedy distribution label, and they release a lot of independently produced comedy specials online. So they have some really good relationships with like Spotify, Sirius Radio, and they also have a pretty big following on their YouTube channel. So when I was putting out my special, it was we pitched it to everybody, Netflix, HBO, Hulu, everybody. And they all said no, because they usually say no to like 99% of people, unless your last name is Chappelle or Rock. Mm-hmm. And 800 Pound Gorilla was a really cool, like, kind of in between just releasing it on my own and getting it on a big streaming platform. So I'm stoked to be rocking with them. They do a lot of good work. And they worked with Matt Rife a while back, too. So they know the game.
So what are – you said you have a couple other bigger goals earlier that you're kind of still trying to work towards. Now, where you're sitting today, what are kind of your, like – I don't want to say goals, but what are you looking forward to – and like trying to reach in the next couple of years? Now that you're growing.
Yeah, my biggest goal is to reach a point where I can play in the NBA All-Star Celebrity Game. That's it.
Have you asked, bro? Because I feel like you could.
I think we're gonna ask next year. Now that the special is out,
I think you could get into that because like you're watching that and you're like, well, oh, that's comedians are like now starting to play in the All-Star Game or Celebrity All-Star Game.
And there's some people that have been in the celebrity game that don't have like a crazy following. So
I mean, there was a couple of I'm like, who is that?
And then randomly like Ron Artest is pulling up, dude.
Yeah, like who is this?
So that would be that's a major goal. When I do that, I will say I've made it.
Bro, you are hilarious, bro. No Netflix special. I just want to go play in the NBA celebrity. Yeah,
that's it, dude. I don't need Netflix. Put me in the game. But yeah, bro, you know, I've been on the internet so much over the past couple of years and making digital content for social media, while it's super fun and it allows me to grow creatively, it's not the end goal. You know, I am moving into a space where I want to launch my own TV and film projects in a bigger way. Cause a big part of my background is in producing and directing. Everything you've seen of mine, I've produced, I've put it together and I've directed it. And coming from the PA space, when I was working as a PA, I was studying. I was watching these dudes and watching and learning their language and trying to be a sponge to learn and soak up their flow throughout the project, from conceptualization through the shoot day and into editing and delivery. And I wanted to know every single aspect of everything. What camera is that? What lens? Why would you move the camera this way? Why does this shot look like that? What is a storyboard? All these things, those were all like a priority for me to learn. So the intention is to use the social media and the internet as a foundation and a launch pad to go up into the bigger world of producing and developing my own CV.
But with that said, I don't mean to cut you off, but with that said, even doing this special, that's got to be somewhat like, I don't know, stressful on you to do all that. And like, how does the behind the scenes of doing a special like that even work? Like, do you have a little mini team? Do you hire somebody just for a day? And then are you playing multiple shows that we always hear where, you know, comedians, the one special they come out is like the sixth take out of whatever city, right?
Yeah, dude. So the special is like the first kind of step toward that space of developing and producing bigger work. This special was nuts to make because it was all self-produced and self-financed. So I literally like depleted my entire bank account to get this thing out. And I put together a team. You know, I got my buddy David, who shoots almost all of my stuff. He's my cinematographer. He brought on four guys to the camera team. I had two guys helping with production. I had a makeup artist. I had a coordinator that was facilitating communications between the venue, the camera guys, the hotel, like travel, logistics, all that stuff. It's a lot of work to make it happen. It was about a month of prep to put it together. And then it was 8 months, no, 4 months of editing because of all there's a lot of visual effects and there's a lot of like cutaway stuff. So we had to schedule all that stuff. And then I had a visual effects artist that I had him work. I think he put in like over 100 hours, maybe 200 hours total.
Yeah, I mean, what you were doing in that special, I haven't seen anywhere else. Like, no one
cool,
does.
Cool, thanks, man. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's interesting.
Yeah, I wanted it to be a little bit of a trip, you know?
Yeah.
Because you watch a lot of stand-up specials, it's just a dude, somebody talking into a mic, which is great. And I love that. That's totally cool. That's very traditional. It's like the core, it's the blood of what stand-up comedy is. And I just wanted to do something a little bit different, try a different approach. So kind of tried to fold my own.
And then how many tries did that special take? Or I guess how many times did it take to?
Oh, yeah. So we shot four shows over the course of one weekend out in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And we only used one of the shows for the special. So,
and how do you know that that one is it? How do you know that that one is it?
I knew as soon as it was done, as soon as the show was done, there were two shows that were like sold out and two were about 70% full. So right away, I knew the 70% shows were not going to be the special shows. And of the two that were sold out, one was just better audience reaction than the other one. So that's how I knew right away. Yeah.
I also want to get into a little bit to your podcast because we are on a podcast right now. How did you get into podcasting? And it's kind of a different side of your life, I feel like, your podcast. So what is that about? And for people that don't know.
So I got a podcast right now called Good Trip. It's a 10-part series. I release a new part every year. I'm going to do 3 parts total. So 2 are out right now. And it's a psychedelic podcast. Talk to people from entertainment, business, medicine, and more about psychedelics, their experiences, their perspectives, the industry, and the kind of psychedelic renaissance that we're in right now. You know, I work with a lot of companies that are putting a lot of good out into the world in this particular space. There's a company called Vets, V-E-T-S. They send veterans with PTSD overseas for psychedelic assisted therapy using ayahuasca, Ibogaine, 5-MeO-DMT. And they have an incredible success rate in a space where pharmaceutical companies are failing and the VA is failing and all these other like grandfathered in resources are just not working. Psychedelics have the scientific proof now to show that they can positively alter somebody's literal brain chemistry to help them overcome PTSD, trauma, stresses, and anxieties that are crippling beyond all belief. And it's a really cool space to be a part of. You know, I've been working with a couple different medicines in that space for maybe 8 years now, microdosing psilocybin once in a while. I have my own protocol. And I've sat with ayahuasca a fair amount of times. And it's a space that a lot of people are talking more about, but there's still a really unfortunate stigma because as soon as you bring up psychedelics to some people, they think, oh, just a bunch of hippies getting naked and doing acid in the field. And like, yeah, I do that. And I have done that, you know, and it's super fun. But the intention behind the movement as I can see from my perspective is how can we offer people new modalities of help in place of ways that are just not working. And for a lot of people, especially, you know, in this first step in getting psychedelics legalized for therapy use in particular, a lot of people are finding a lot of relief and a lot of support. And, you know, it's not just taking the drug. It's not just ingesting the psilocybin. It's not just drinking the ayahuasca and having the experience. There's a whole preparation period and there's a whole integration period after. And we talk about that on the podcast. So as you can tell, I love this topic and I could go on for hours, but
is that kind of just like to combat, like just, yeah. Is that just to combat, like just people taking a bunch of pills in America? Is that like what you're trying to combat?
Yeah, dude. So, you know, SSRIs and all these other drugs that have been chemically engineered to numb or dull the pain. We've seen time and time again the addiction that can spring from that. We've seen the negative side effects that can make things worse for the person. We've seen it work too. From time to time, it works. I'm not saying it's always bad and big pharma is like not doing any good, but there's just other ways. And there are other beliefs, traditions, and practices that have been happening across the world for hundreds and hundreds of years, like ayahuasca, like Ibogaine. And now with MDMA going into therapeutic trials with the FDA, and it should be legalized by the end of this year, which is incredible. We're going to be able to offer people like veterans who have severe PTSD. We're going to be able to offer them help when they think all hope is lost. You know, the tagline for this organization, Vets, that I work with is end veteran suicide. Very simple. It's super fucking simple. And if there's a way to do that, that involves eating a plant, that should be something that we look into and talk about more. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of really cool people doing a lot of really good work. The podcast is called Good Trip. There's 10 episodes per season. Two seasons are out right now. Another one will be out next year. And it's cool, man. It's fun. Podcasting is it's a really good way to connect with people and offer something new to folks who follow you, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, I listened to a short bit of it before, and it's a very different perspective that I think a lot of people could reach if they just listen. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, you hear all the time nowadays, it's more of a debate. But a podcast, you can't debate what's being said because you're just listening to it. And I think that's, like, the point of view of, like, if you just listen to what's being said instead of giving your feedback, I think it a lot of people just listening to that kind of perspective could change a lot of things. So
there is no top comment, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
And I mean, YouTube, yeah. I guess.
But yeah, it's nice to be able to get different perspectives, and that's kind of why I like podcasting in general, because they can't really rebut you right on the spot.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, you also hear about like mushrooms, like people putting mushrooms in coffee, or you know, like microdosing and things like that. You know, I feel like a lot of people aren't very educated with, but obviously it does sound like there's benefits to it.
Oh yeah, there's a ton. And you know, I would never just generalize it as mushrooms can help you. Everybody should try them. That's not the vibe. I am much more intending to encourage people to have a willingness to learn. And just if somebody who has no idea what that space is and doesn't know anything about the psychedelic movement and psychedelic therapy and these different plant medicines and how they can help in ways that pharmaceutical pills don't. My biggest encouragement is just have the willingness to learn and hold space for all this information to change your mind, because people these days are so rooted in like not being down to have an open mind, whether it's politics, psychedelics, health and wellness, nutrition. There's just like there's a lack of willingness to learn, and there's a lack of curiosity, and that's a bummer because there's so much cool shit in the world that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I just hope that so the goal behind my podcast was to help people kind of learn just a little bit more, even if people are never gonna try psychedelics or seek out a different type of medicine for healing whatever issues they might have. Just know that it works for a lot of other people, and that enough is support.
Yeah, I love it. Trying to put myself on maybe something like that. You'd be down to try it with me?
Yeah, if we could
Put us onto a product, dude. Like, what should we do? You know?
Oh, dude, I don't want to say it out loud because I don't want it to be like product placement. Yeah.
Right.
I don't even know if they would want me to. I'll message you guys separately though. You know, there's
all right.
There's a couple of companies that are doing like psilocybin mushroom microdose protocols. So they take the psilocybin mushroom, dry it out, grind it up, put it into a capsule, and then you have a protocol that they'll give you a certain amount, 50 milligrams or 100 milligrams for a couple days a week, a couple weeks in a row, and then a couple weeks off. And that's a very loose general example. And that's definitely not like advice to anybody, but that's just an example of like what I've heard some people do that has helped them kind of alleviate stress or develop new approaches toward anxiety or creativity. So it's cool, bro. Yeah. I'll message you separate.
Yeah. The Fruitables are $20 a day, you know, like I gotta get away from it.
Yeah,
dude, I'm curious about, we've got a bullet point in our notes here about Creator to Watch by the New York Comedy Festival. Was that like kind of a big moment in your life? Like what does that even mean? What is that?
Yeah, that was cool. So a lot of festivals have these lists that come out with, you know, New Faces was one for Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. Netflix has their own thing. New York Comedy Festival, one of the biggest festivals in the US, they chose, I think, 15 or so content creators online to spotlight. And they chose me, and it was an honor. It's super cool. You know, it's like as a comedian, you start your career always wanting to be on these lists. And then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years pass and you don't get on a list. And then you're like, I don't need that fucking list. I don't give a shit about this list. And then all of a sudden, as soon as you start thinking that way, you get on the list. And so that's what happened with this New York Comedy Festival. I was like, I don't need that. And then they gave it to me and I was like, oh, this is dope.
Yeah, I got it.
Look at what I did. So
that is cool.
It's it's like a cool, you know, it's a stat. It's a stat. It's like how many triple doubles does LeBron have? That's
right.
Brent Pelly got the New York Comedy Festival spot. So
added to the resume.
It was an honor. Yeah.
Added to the resume. Hey, I'm while we had the opportunity to talking to you, what did you think about, like, this is a very broad question.
Yeah.
What do you think about the Cat Williams wave and him kind of starting that movement, being a comedian and I don't know. Did you have any immediate reactions to that interview with Shannon Sharp?
I only saw highlights of it. But I know he ended up getting on Rogan and they did a whole episode together.
Saw that too. Yeah. Did you see that?
Yeah. Cat is hilarious. I love Cat Williams. Anytime a comedian or any type of performer has like a major, you know, rise and then they kind of like go a little bit quiet for a while, but then they rise again later in their life or later in their career. I think that's dope, dude. I think it's cool as hell. I don't know that I have an opinion on Cat with this current chapter just because I don't know enough about it and I didn't watch enough, but just seeing how many people love him because of Wild and Out. And he's like a Wild and Out legend. You know, he's the Wild and Out OG. He was one of the first people to pop from being a cast member on Wild and Out. So just having that connection, I've never met him or anything, but just having that connection makes me super stoked that he's having a cool wave right now. Cause he's hilarious, dude.
What is like the friendships between like all the popular comedians, like you guys out there, like Bert Kreischer? I know Kat's maybe too big, but who's the other one? Shane Gillis, like all those guys. Like, are you guys like somewhat intertwined with each other? Is there competition? Are you guys friends, or is this like, hey, I'm
a lot of
you?
There are a lot of friend groups in comedy. I don't know those guys. I've never met Bert. I've never met Shane. I'm a fan of both. But you know, a lot of those, and it's tough too when people live in different cities. I don't know that I've ever even lived in the same city as someone like Shane. I think he's in Texas now or something. I have no idea, but we have a lot of mutual friends, which is cool. And being in this same like kind of lane of making videos, moving into the TV space, touring as a stand-up comic, we work at all the same clubs. So, you know, I'll go perform in Chicago for a weekend and I'll see somebody's poster on the wall that's coming next weekend. And it's, you know, it's somebody like Tom Segura or Theo Vaughn or someone like that. So even though I don't know those guys personally, we do share a connection. Comedians, stand-up comics all have some type of bond.
Even if it's just like inspiration, like writing jokes, writing jokes and shit. Like, do you take like subconsciously, like kind of take a little bit, like bits and pieces of whatever everyone else does maybe, or just kind of have your own style?
No, I over time you develop your own style. I think when people start off at the very beginning, you're kind of influenced a lot by whoever you're watching. Right. But over time you start to develop your own style, your own voice. I honestly don't watch very much stand-up comedy anymore because I don't want to know what other people are talking about. I don't want to be even subconsciously influenced by what other people are talking about. Because if I watch somebody and they have a really killer biohacking joke, then I'm going to be like, ah, but my biohacking joke sucks. And then I'm not going to do my biohacking joke anymore. So I try to be more inspired by real life than I am by like comedians. You know, you also don't want to like steal, and that's you don't want to do a Carlos Mencia on people.
Well, that's what Cat Williams was talking about. I didn't even know who he was talking about. He's like, yeah, the guy stole my jokes, and it was like a whole big thing on the internet, and it's like, what the hell's going on, dude? You know?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that's like you get blacklisted for life if you do something like that.
Yeah. And then for social media, on the social media side, we see a bunch of comedians just posting their clips on TikTok. Is that like something that like is in your social media strategy?
Yeah, dude. So a big part of shooting the special was to get all the clips out of it and put them out online. Cause I don't really have a lot of stand up out. A lot of people know me just for my sketch comedy videos. They don't really know that I do stand up. So now that the special is out, I'll have a bunch of clips to post everywhere. And hopefully that'll kind of let people know that I'm on the road. I tour. I've been doing this for 10 years. So yeah, I'll be posting a lot more stand-up clips everywhere too. Mm-hmm. Kind of mix them in.
Yeah. And is your style, I saw you do it a little bit on the special, but like, how do you feel about crowd work? Like, is that like, you, do you try to rely on crowd work a little bit, or you try to just maybe do your own thing on stage?
I,
mix it in?
I do not rely on crowd work. I hate love it, crowd work. Yeah. You hate it.
I'm going to be honest. Like, you're a really cool dude and I'm loving this conversation. I don't like comedians. I don't like going to stand up comedy because when we went out to LA, we went to the comedy club. Our first time out there in Los Angeles, we recorded at Dash Radio Studios.
I knew this was going to come up. Yes. I was trying to get away from this and hopefully
I will never
get
away from it, bro. I ego death. Like, I looked like a little F boy. You know, I was wearing chains because we just recorded. I was trying to look cool, dude. My friend sat me like the closest to the stage, and it was like a 3-hour, 8 guys line up or whatever. I kept getting shitted on every single time, like by every single guy that kept saying the same, where are you from, dude, with all this necklace and chain. Sucks, dude. Yeah. Like, even to the point. Where, like, other people in the crowd were like, dude, the guy said the same joke, like, right before you. And he's like, oh, did he say it 9 times? But I ego death, and I like, got really upset at, like, my friends, and it kind of ruined our trip for us. And it's,
oh, shit. So, yeah, all right, well, next time, come see me. I promise I won't pick on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will.
Scared to go, dude. How do you think you know, like, people feel like that, though. Like, what's the line of being a professional, like, comedian and be like, I don't. Especially with the special too, because you did a little bit of that Pledge of Allegiance like joke with that guy or whatever. What's the line there where you don't want to make someone feel uncomfortable and you also are trying to have a banger special come out at the same time?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a good question because there are some dudes who just do crowd work, right? Like, there's some dudes there where if they're doing an hour long set, 45 or 50 minutes of it will be straight crowd work, talking to people, picking on people, whatever. And some of these guys are really, really good at that. Matt Rife is phenomenal at crowd work. He's so sharp and quick with it. It's not my style, really, to do a lot of crowd work. The type of crowd work that I do is kind of just quick, like quick jokes, maybe a quick roast. But I just naturally don't lean very mean. That's just me. I think the people who do can do it really, really well, and it's funny. But like when I picked on that guy in the front row at my special, it was always quick at him and then back to what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And that's partly because I was recording a special, but I would have done that anyways in a show because I'm there to put on a show. I'm not there to talk to people. So sometimes if there's like a lull or if I forget where I'm at in my set or if I really want to test myself, then yeah, I'll talk to somebody. But I personally never lean toward like being mean and making fun of the person. I'd rather have them laughing with me and everybody else. But it's different for everybody. Every performer, every comedian has a different take on it. Some comedians are like, yeah, I love roasting people. If I see somebody, I gotta get them. And that's cool too. That's just a different way of doing it, right? So you got by a bunch of people who
I did, yeah.
Who like smelled red meat, fresh meat, yeah. You know?
I'm easy to mess with too, but yeah, dude, I just think I'm just curious because people are probably pretty awkward when they're getting picked on in front of a whole show, you know, it might not make your set or whatever as great as maybe you would have liked, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Last couple here. We'll let you go here. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Dude,
I'm curious about, what was I going to say, bro? I don't know. I totally forgot, bro. Let's come back to that. Tours, you're touring right now. I'm going to come back to that because it was on top of that.
Addition
to that. But like touring right now, what are you doing right now with touring?
Yeah, so I'm booking a bunch of shows across the U.S. I'm and Canada. I'm coming to Toronto. I got dates in Florida, Northern California, Sacramento, San Jose, San Francisco. Back to Texas soon too. Later this year, I'll be in Vegas, Chicago, Arizona, Kentucky. I'm kind of everywhere. So
redpellet.com/shows.
Nashville. Definitely coming back to Nashville. Yeah.
Yeah. We only have Zanies, sure. Though. We only have
Zanies. Zanies is rad. Zanies is rad. That's one of the best clubs in the U.S., dude. I love that place.
I remember my question, by the way. My bad, dude. It's Sunday, dude. I got it.
Yeah, we're tired, dude. Yeah.
Bad, bro. Woke culture, like just being a comedian right now, especially like political year coming up, like, or we're in the political year right now. Do you have to adjust your game or your set to like this whole entire woke culture and watch out what you say?
No.
Okay.
it goes
like,
back
to comedians
what I said
feel
earlier,
like that,
like,
or they just don't care, you know?
Some, comedians, it's tough to generalize because every comic is different, and some comics are like pretty far left, and they do a lot of, you know, what you could call woke type comedy. But then I know comedians that are probably pretty left, but they don't do any political comedy. And then I know a couple of comedians that are pretty far right, and they only do right-wing comedy. And, you know, I think all of it is needed because there's a spectrum of people in an audience, and there's a spectrum of people across the US. And for me, I won't do a joke just because it's offensive, but I also won't not do a joke because it's offensive. You know what I mean? So I am at a point now where I kind of like, I don't really give a shit if somebody's offended, but at the same time, I don't really go that hard naturally. Like, I'm not like some edgy dude that's always trying to piss people off and like say the thing you're not supposed to say. Every once in a while, I might have a joke that like dips into some territory that makes people feel uncomfortable, but what the fuck? It's a joke. Who cares? So some people definitely abide by that woke kind of line, and you know, they'll never make a trans joke or a gay joke, or they'll never make a joke about race or anything like that. Trans people, gay people, white people, black people, they can all get these laughs, dude. If I got something and it's funny, then I'm gonna do it.
Well,
And
that's on us, bro. Like, that's not on you guys, you
yeah.
know? Like,
Yeah. And if
we're
we're
just
talking
soft.
about, yeah, so there's people that are soft. And also, you know, the craziest thing is people in America are so hyped up about equality, especially like what the political left, the left side, and people that you might consider as woke or whatever. They're so concerned about equality, but not when it comes to like being made fun of a little bit, you know? Like if we're all going to be equal, then everything's going to be equal and everybody can be made fun of as long as it's being done with the intention of humor and not with the intention of like condescending put downs, you know, and insults. And I think people have developed a pretty thin skin, unfortunately. But I got faith that on the whole, most people will laugh at a joke and understand that comedy is subjective, you know?
No, I get it. Yeah, we're just soft. Apologies on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because even like Matt Rife's like Netflix special, it sounds like, or it seems like his whole demographic is female, right? And he comes out like that first joke that completely just shitted on females. I think he made a joke about punching some, you know, the lady had a black eye or something. It was like, I don't know. You know, he got a bunch of kind of negative feedback for that. But again, I think that's just us being soft, dude. Fuck that. Anything else? Or yeah, sorry, I don't know if you had anything else.
I'm good. I ain't got
You're
much.
good?
I'm severely hungover, so
No, you're not that bad, bro.
my brain is like mush.
You're not that bad. What do you
I
think?
started off
Bread
I
and
started
water,
off
dude.
good, and now I'm like, all right, I'm kind of
Should we go
like
get the IVs? Dude, Brent, thanks for hanging out
dude,
with us,
yeah, get some
bro.
IVs. I appreciate you guys, man. Thank you for having me, bro.
What's like next? You want to plug your stuff? Like, obviously the special Conscious Bro is out right now. Just had the birthday. You're going on tour. Like, where can people find you?
Yeah, man. Instagram is best at Brent Pella. I do videos there pretty much every day now. YouTube channel is Brent Pella. Tour dates, brentpella.com. Special is out on YouTube. Just type in Brent Pella special. It's called Conscious Bro. And yeah, man, it's a good hang, dude. I
Oh, dude,
appreciate
we
you,
forgot
brother.
to ask. All right, two more
Yeah.
questions. My bad, dude.
Yeah, hit me.
Who do you think's gonna win March Madness?
Yep.
And damn, I forgot the second one.
Dude,
Oh yeah. Oh
so,
yeah, man to man, what's the key to success? We always ask at the end.
oh, word. Okay, bet. So, all right, I'm gonna have to pivot on the March Madness one because unfortunately, this is the only year I have not paid enough attention to college basketball. College basketball is my shit, dude. I follow college ball more than any sport, except this year has been so stacked with the special and other projects that I haven't had a chance. So I know today's Selection Sunday, so I'm stoked. I'm gonna be watching that all day. So I don't know, but I'll pivot and give you. We'll drop into some basketball. We'll stay in the basketball world right now. I do think in the NBA, this man Wemby is gonna
Okay.
be. He can be. He can be a top five player of all time. He can be. I don't know if he will be, but I think he can be. And I think it's gonna depend on his size and his athleticism as he grows. Because if he can turn into a Giannis at 7 feet tall, 7'1" or whatever, he's already pulling back for threes. He's dribbling the ball up the court all the way. Like, he's crazy to watch, dude. It's like watching a daddy long leg spider in human form.
Hey, he just got dunked on the other night, though. Did you see that?
He did. That was crazy. He did get yatted on. He's got some work to do, but I think he's got the framework of one of the greatest. If he
Are you Kings guy, I'm guessing, then?
Yeah, by nationality, I guess. Okay. But I grew up like a massive Kobe fan because I coached at Kobe's camp for a while. So,
Oh, really?
Grew up a major Kobe fan. Yeah.
Yeah. We used to play NBA 2K22 with Kobe all the time.
No, it wasn't 22, bro. It was.
Yeah, it was 22.
22?
I think it was. Was it like
14? Is that the one he was on the cover?
Yeah. Is that, what was that, 20?
Yeah,
we used to play.
Wait, what does that mean? What do you mean you coached there? What is that? What are you talking
about? Yeah, so he had a summer camp for kids at UC Santa Barbara every year. Mm-hmm. And so I interned my senior year, and then I coached for 4 years after that. I had a team of 12, 10, and 11-year-olds. A full week, 600 kids would come to the camp and stay in the dorms.
So you're a real hooper,
Santa Barbara.
Dude. Like, we're talking to a
real
hooper.
Oh, yeah, I still ball. Yeah.
Have you ever met Kobe?
Yeah, he was there every day of every camp, every year. He we talked, you know, every once in a while. I invited him out to some shows. You know, he was paying attention. Like, he would walk around from court to court and, like, stop practice to teach 8-year-olds how to throw a better bounce pass. That's how much this man cared about basketball. Dude, it was crazy to see. And it was really, really cool to be around. Yeah, he was fully committed. Yeah.
Damn, bro. That's really interesting, actually. Okay, well, then, before Man to Man was key to success, who do you think is going to win the NBA Finals this year?
Ooh, what's the rankings right now?
Timberwolves number one.
Hey, or just a better question, you a LeBron or MJ guy, dude?
MJ, Jordan.
MJ, yeah.
For life. For life, dude. I'm too committed. Yeah. I know the argument. I've heard the argument. It doesn't change. It doesn't change me. I would rather give Jordan the ball 10 times out of 10. And that's like in a game winning situation. And so that's what makes me go for Jordan. Yeah.
I will tell you, we're big Pacers guys. I was born in Indiana. Liam's got ties in Indianapolis, used to live there. So, episode 8 of The Last Dance, where Reggie pushed off my favorite episode, obviously.
Yeah. Dude, I got to watch The Last Dance again.
You like
that
one?
Such a bang.
I guess it was good.
Yeah. Anyways, man to man, what's the key to success, dude?
Key to success, dude. Man, drink more water. Breathe through your nose. If you want a cookie, eat a fucking cookie.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll give you something for real. So Kobe said, and my favorite Kobe quote was when he was talking about visualizing success. He said, in high school and beyond, he would always visualize himself as having already won an NBA championship. And he would sit with that feeling and move through life with that feeling. That way, when he eventually got there, that feeling wouldn't be distracting or intoxicating. It would feel natural. And he would, like, kind of just embody what that feeling was of having accomplished his goals. And that's what got him to that point of actually accomplishing those goals. And I think that could be applied to any walk of life. That's what I move through life with every day. You know, the act of visualization is powerful as shit. You don't need psychedelics to do it. You just do it. And, you know, so that to me is like, if you can move through life feeling like you've already won, then you're one step closer to actually winning, you know? So That's the Lord talking, brother.
That's the Lord talking, dude.
Or the mushrooms. I don't know.
Or the mushrooms. Well, dude, thanks for hopping on the podcast. And,
appreciate you.
Hang tight. We'll talk to you after this. But, dude, thanks for hopping on the pod. And, dude, congrats on all the success, man. Like, seriously.
Appreciate you guys, man. Thank you for having me, bro.
Yes, sir.